This podcast is brought to you by the Legarten Institute. I'm Sianne Hansen, Executive Director, and we hope you enjoy this conversation. Welcome to the Legarten Institute. I'm Sianne Hansen, the Executive Director, and we are delighted to be hosting the Home Secretary tonight and supporting Women to Win. Now, for those of you who don't know much about Legarten Institute, we are an international think tank, and we focus on promoting prosperity. Now, we do that through our research, and particularly research in our core theme, which is revitalizing capitalism and democracy. For example, we have many programs. One of them is Tim Montgomery's Reclaiming Capitalism as a Force for Good. We're delighted you're all here. If you need to know anything more about the Institute, just grab me afterwards. We have many events, but I'm sure tonight will be one of the best. So put your hands together.
Good evening, everyone. I think some of you will know me as the one who emails you all the time. My name's Resham. I've worked for Women to Win for over 2 years now, and I'm also the candidate for Dulwich and West Norwood. So. Yes. So I've had the ability to see the good that Women to Win does from both sides of things as a candidate and as someone who has seen the training that everyone gets and what opportunities we provide in terms of funding, training for general election days, how to write a leaflet, all that kind of thing. When you're a candidate for the first time, you suddenly find yourself thrown into the deep end. You're asked about what leaflets you should do, how you should fundraise, what you want to spend your money on, canvassing, door knocking. And I know that people like Anne and Guy and Brooks, who I see in the back there, and Ellen have all been so supportive of the work that candidates are doing for the Conservative Party. I'm so pleased that we're here today to hear from the wonderful Home Secretary, because she is someone who has done so well in Parliament, and I know that many of the female candidates in this room today will see her as an example of where we could be one day with enough hard work and campaigning. Maybe.
I started stuffing envelopes, so there you go.
So there's hope for me yet then. So if you look around the room, there's lots of people with blue rosettes on. These are all candidates. So if you have any questions about what we're doing or how you can be of any help through stuffing envelopes or knocking on doors for us, I'm sure we'd all be grateful. And thank you to all of you, because without you helping us, we couldn't be doing the work that we're doing. So I hope you have a wonderful evening. And now I'd like to introduce Theresa May, our Secretary of State for the Home Office, and Eve Pollard, who has achieved great things in the field of politics. Sorry, I'm here presenting, so it's hot, I'm getting nervous. But I hope you all have a wonderful evening and enjoy the In Conversation with, and please do talk to all the candidates about what they're doing so you know how you're helping us. Thank you very much.
Good evening, everybody. I first of all want to thank Theresa, who has had a jolly busy day today, and who is, of course, the longest running Home Secretary for over 50 years. I've done this in two parts because I really wanted this to be informative and help all those ladies out there with blue rosettes in particular. So we'll start by that, and then I hope we'll have some fun later. There will be a chance for you to ask your own questions at the end, and we'll give you a signal so that if you're dying to ask the Home Secretary something, you can. Now, let's go back to when you were elected. Can I just ask you, you come from a political family or a family that discussed politics?
Not a political family, a family that discussed politics. I'm an only child, and so I was brought up very much in that sort of adult world. My parents always watched the news, and so that sort of what was
Sunday
happening,
lunch,
current affairs talk. was part of the sort of discussions that took place.
And were they conservative with the big C or a small C or both C's?
They were conservative voters, but my father was a clergyman. I'm from a vicarage, child of a vicarage, and he had a very clear view that his job was for the whole of his parish. And so he should never reveal what his political views were. And indeed, he prevented me from being very active in politics at an early age, so I was allowed to stuff envelopes in an office somewhere, but not actually
not
go out on the doors,
yes,
steps, so that nobody could identify his political views through me.
Okay, so you get educated and you go to Oxford where you meet your husband.
Indeed.
Benazir, yes. Bhutto.
Wasn't my... Yes, Benazir Bhutto introduced us, yes.
We are wide here, wide Broadchurch, but perhaps not that wide yet. Yes.
Yes. No, Benazir, I was introduced to Philip by Benazir Bhutto, so yes.
We'll talk about husbands and how useful they can be later, but... Why did you go into politics?
Well, politics is something that... at quite a young age, I mean, when I was at school, I sort of thought that politics was something that interested me, so it just sort of captured me. And I suppose it was about, primarily about making a difference. I mean, that sounds a bit trite, but it is genuine. And you can, as a, you know, in the political world generally, but as a member of parliament, you make a difference to your constituents and your constituency, and obviously in government, you're able to make a difference more broadly. And I think being part of the debate as well.
Right. Now, at the moment, you stand one of the rare women, I think virtually only Mrs. T before you, as the head of a great office of state. But in 1992, you made your first attempt, correct?
Indeed, yes, yes.
Tell us about that. Northwest Durham.
Northwest Durham, yes. Well, for those of you who have been through the selection process and are in a seat that is perhaps not as promising as some other seats are. It's that part of that initiation process. And I was applying to seats, any seats that came up, really, at that stage. I'd only recently gone onto the candidates list a couple of years before the election. I went onto the candidates list and applied for all the seats that came up. Northwest Durham came up. I applied for it. I was interviewed. I have to say that the... I'm trying to think, the number of people, we went up to the interview, and it was in somebody's home, so I was interviewed in their front room, which isn't what you quite expect. You're expecting, you know, you're trying to become a candidate, you imagine hordes of people interviewing you somewhere, but I was interviewed in front room, so there weren't that many. And then I think there were 12 people at the final interview, at the final selection process, so you get the picture of an association that wasn't that strong. But it was great. It was great fun, but very hard work, but a very good experience, because actually it teaches you whether you can do it. You know, being a candidate for a campaign, which is a minimum of 3 weeks, at the actual election campaign, let alone the nursing of the seat, but that election campaign where you are the candidate, it's physically quite tiring, it's mentally quite tiring, and actually you need to be able to do that, and fighting a no-hoper seat, as I was, actually tells you, yes, you can or no, you can't.
And also whether you enjoy it or not.
And whether you enjoy it or not, yes.
And then, only 2 years later, you stand in a by-election against Margaret Hodge.
Indeed, yes, in Barking.
Barking.
Barking, that was...
Two stops past Dagenham, yes.
Two stops past Dagenham, yes. And unfortunately, Screaming Lord Such, the late Screaming Lord Such, always said he wanted to stand in Barking, because then he could talk about being barking mad. But in fact, there were three by-elections. There were three by-elections in East London on the same day. So there was the Barking by-election, Dagenham, and one of the other. I'm trying to remember the other seat nearby. And so there were three of us, three candidates, one of whom is also in the cabinet now, Philip Hammond. It was quite collegiate because we had a single office for the campaign.
Right.
And so we were all together, so we were able to kind of share experiences. And
was that helpful? I mean, in a word, in a way, talking to the girls or the ladies with the blue rosettes, is that helpful because you have that to bounce back on? You have somebody else who's in the same boat very close to you.
Yes, and you can share experiences and,
yes,
and laugh at some things that have happened and so forth. And that's why I think the City Seats initiative,
yes,
for people who haven't stood before is actually very good, because you're there in a group, so you can support each other before you actually go to being just the candidate in one particular seat.
Can I ask you, what's the sort of most ridiculous question you've ever been asked by a selection committee?
Oh, goodness me. I find that quite difficult
strange
to answer, actually.
The strangest.
I'm not sure I do remember, I'm not sure this is the strangest, but I do remember going to the, this is a story, I was being interviewed in Kensington and Chelsea, and I walked into the interview, and I'd previously not been selected in Ashford, and one of the people there in the last three was David Cameron, and he didn't win that one. Damien Green defeated him in that one.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
And then very shortly afterwards, I went into the Kensington and Chelsea selection, and one of the people sitting around the table on the executive doing the selection interview was David Cameron. But somebody else actually asked me, he said it's a new, because there have been boundary changes, he said, now sort of describe for me, draw for me what the outline of the exact details of the outline of the boundaries of the constituency are. And I sort of muttered something, and I knew there was a map on the wall behind me. And I was dying just to sort of turn round
and sort of, yes, turn round.
So I failed that test, I'm afraid.
And then Maidenhead.
Yes.
Now, Maidenhead, you made it. Are there any tips you could pass on here about, we know that this is not an exact science. We know that people are choosing people and, she's blonde or we're not having her or, whatever. What do you think made the difference at Maidenhead?
Well, there's one thing I would say that is intangible, really, and it was said to me when I failed, when I had previously been going, the time when I was selected in Northwest Durham, I'd done some London selections as well, and one of the London selections, which I didn't get, Ian Taylor, who was the president of the association, came out and said to those of us who'd failed, he said, don't worry, somewhere out there is a seat with your name on it. It's just a question of finding it. And there is something that you can't quite put your finger on where you actually connect and click with a particular seat and a particular group of people in a seat.
Isn't that interesting?
Which is interesting. And somebody else, an agent actually in the party, said to me, you will probably get a seat which has got a main sort of urban area and a little bit of rural hinterland. And it's exactly what I got in terms of Maidenhead.
Isn't that interesting?
Which is interesting. But I also think in Maidenhead, and remember, the party has changed since, and a lot of work's been done on the selection process.
Sure.
But at that stage, I think one of the differences in Maidenhead was that there were a lot of people in the selection committee. The average age of the selecting people was slightly lower than in some associations. And also, there were more people who, I would say, were connected, a lot of people who ran their own businesses, who were, quite senior in business. They were in a business environment where they saw women in a different role.
Ah, that's what I was going to come to, because
yes.
of women.
So yes. they had seen women not as the secretary, but as an equal, as somebody who was
yes.
working alongside them very often. And there were women in the audience who had set up their own businesses and were being very active in business.
Right.
So they had perhaps a slightly different approach.
And time, of course.
And, yes.
And starting organisations like this, of course, all of that. Yes.
yes.
Okay. Now, is there a tip? Obviously, you have to get on with your local chairman, your agent. But is there somebody in virtually every constituency, you think, if you get her or him on your side, you will be a happier bunny? I mean, is there someone, either the person who actually does everything, the Anne of the local association, who? No, Anne, don't. We know you do everything. It's all right. We know you're God. Is there somebody that you say, look, yes, of course, there are these obvious big fish in this relatively small pond, but if you get on with the vicar's wife or the so-and-so, this makes a difference. Any suggestions?
Gosh, well, you've almost put your finger on it, Eve. I mean, I think, you need to get on with the person who does all the work. Because if they're doing all the work that you need them actively to want to do that work for you.
Yes. They'll be
doing it for the party, but you also want them to actively feel that they're doing it for you as well. But I mean, I think the important thing is to, there's always a great challenge, and it's of course when you're in a seat which has got perhaps a very small association and not much of a structure, it becomes can become sometimes more of a challenge because you have to, by definition, you're working in a voluntary organisation where people are giving their time freely. To be able to do this, giving it because they believe in the Conservative cause, but as I say also, you want them to actively want to help to get you elected
so
and
you
to work
to
for you.
So you need to turn up and help them
so
put
you
out
need
the
to be you do need to be willing to do all those sorts of things,
yes.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And muck in and actually be part of the organisation.
Yeah, I think that's a very important lesson. What about... The interesting thing about being a woman, shall we talk about that? Because I've been a woman in a man's world, you are a woman. How important, how difficult is that now by comparison to when you started?
I think it is different now. I think it has changed. I think the party has changed in terms of its attitude to women. So a lot of work's been done with not just the... you know, the party and its selection processes and trying to make sure that those are more equal and don't have an unconscious bias within them. Obviously, there is the support of Women to Win, which has now been going for quite a number of years and providing very practical and helpful support to people and continuing to do that. So I think there is a different attitude now. But the challenges and the expectations of candidates have actually increased. So the amount of time that a candidate is expected to spend in a seat has increased.
Oh, right.
I think for a candidate who is in a marginal seat that you're fighting to take, then the amount of time you now spend in that seat has gone up
right.
from in the past. And so that puts extra pressures on people. And the other thing, which is always one of the things that people rarely talk about, but is important, of course, is the financial pressures that on somebody fighting a seat as a candidate can really be quite quite difficult.
Because you may have to give up your job for a month.
You
or
may
more.
Have to. Yes, yes.
And what about a husband? Is a husband handy in this? I've only had two, but you know.
Well, you know, they come in useful. Yes.
And can you say, I mean, does he obviously gets very involved, I'm told, and he will, if necessary, he'll come and now you're a grand lady, but when you were starting, did he come in and help muck in and do
yes.
things?
Yes, my husband has been interested in politics as well, so and he's chaired a Conservative association, so he knows, he's been an officer of various sorts in Conservative associations, so he knows what it's like, so he understands the sort of that very practical end of it, and also some of the pressures and tensions that come in the association.
Now, other tips. I think I have read every interview you have ever given, because I'm a bit like you. You read the bed boxes. I'm doing this. I've got to read everything. And you're a bit like, I don't know anything about you, which I think is really clever. I mean, I'm the mother of a child who's now on television. People may know my daughter's Claudia Winkleman. And I said, you can go to, you know, she has to go to interviews as you have to. I mean, the Guardian's in love with you. I mean, they interview as many times as you'll stop on the pavement and give them a chance.
Yes.
They're terrified of another woman, aren't they? But anyway, and all you know about her is who she's married to, how many kids she's got, and she likes having fake tans. What I know about you is that you're married, you've been very successful, a bit about your background, and nothing else. Bloody brilliant, if I may say. A little bit about your shoes. Just enough. Is that a plan?
No, it's not a plan, it's just me, I think, is the honest answer. It's not a thought-out thing at all. It's just how I am.
But it's very, very clever. No. I mean, as a journalist, let me say, because... You appear willing, I mean, you know, being interviewed by The Guardian can't be, you know, a bit of a laugh. And there you are, and you talk, and you're nice, and you charm them, as you're charming everyone tonight. But they still don't know anything more about you, and off they go, and they, you know. I think the nearest thing, Alison Pearson found out that you liked Jamie Oliver more than Delia Smith. I think that's the sort of information that, perfectly okay. So you could, I mean, it's just very, very interesting for those people who are going to, don't be too open right now, because later it may come and hit you in the teeth, and you have not got that. We'll talk about later in a minute. Do you, I'm being told I've got to wound up in a minute. Can I just ask you, you're very interestingly, you are the most hardworking person in terms of family. The eldest daughter, the only daughter, we work hardest. Do you care that perhaps the man's world doesn't get you?
I think, if I'm interpreting the question correctly,
yes.
And I think one of the, I've got a slight bee in my bonnet, well, I think one of the challenges for women in politics, I think it's a challenge for women in business, and indeed in any area of activity, is to be able to do the job as themselves and not to feel they have to do it in the way that the men expect it to be done.
Right.
And so that's, I think I have had a slightly different approach in the political world. When I went into the House of Commons in 97, there was still a slightly clubby atmosphere to it. And you know, some feel there's an expectation that you join in that. My view is you just get on with the job and do the job.
Sure.
And don't try to feel that you have to fit into a model that somebody else has set for you.
Because it's a model really you can't fit into because you don't have the correct equipment between your legs.
Right.
no, but I felt that
but
too. I have to ask you about the future. Any future plans about new jobs, perhaps after the election?
The only future plan is to work to make sure we get a Conservative majority government elected.
Theresa, that's why you work so well. Can I wish you every success? And may I say how well you do it, because any day your particular job can explode, can't it? The police, immigration, it's not like there's a plan. Foreign Office, they know when their big days are, you don't. So thank you for handling it so well. Ladies and gentlemen.
To hear more podcasts from the Legatum Institute, please visit our iTunes channel or website at www.li.com.